So a warm welcome to everyone who's joining us today for the e-commerce side session. We'll give people a couple minutes to enter the room. I'd like to thank all of you for joining us today. Greetings to those of you here at FAO headquarters and also to those who are live streaming this session from around the world. I'm Barbara Peterson. I'm a Senior Implementation and Facilitation Specialist, and I'm working in the Implementation and Facilitation Unit at the IPPC Secretariat. And I will be the moderator for today's session. Before we begin, I'd like to make everyone aware that this session offers simultaneous interpretation to all six official FAO languages, and the session is also being recorded, and the recording will be posted to the IPPC website after CPM. So please look for it and share it with your colleagues and your networks. I now have the honor of introducing the IPPC Secretary, Osama Elissi, who will give a few words of welcome and open the CPM 18 side session on e-commerce. Dr. Elissi.
Thank you, Barbara, and good afternoon, everyone, and thank you very much, and welcome to the CPM side session on e-commerce. We appreciate you taking time, and I know this is lunchtime, but appreciate you having the time to come in and listen in to the conversation, participate in a conversation. As you know, the global rise of e-commerce has brought about a transformative shift in the way goods are bought and sold and moved across the globe. And obviously, while presenting economic opportunities, the growth in e-commerce also poses a significant challenges to National Plant Protection Organization because of the potential spread of plant pests through parcels moving on postal and courier pathways. The significant growth in parcel volume puts significant pressure on phytosanitary export and import systems around the world. Intercepting parcels that contain goods that do not meet the phytosanitary import requirements of the destination country is one of the biggest challenges facing MPPOs. Managing e-commerce and the postal and courier pathways is a key priority within the IPPC Strategic Framework 2020-2030. The Strategic Framework Development Agenda on e-commerce is under the oversight of the Implementation and Capacity Development Committee with in partnership and input from the Standard Committee. So this is how important this issue is to the IPPC community. An IC team was formed in 2020 to guide the work of the IPPC as we still and continue to learn today. This IC team has worked together with global subject matter experts to develop a comprehensive guide and infographic video to organize this important side session. The e-commerce side session will focus on few items, important items, including the pest risk associated with e-commerce, the movement of plants and plant products via postal and courier services, and possible strategies for minimizing those risks. Additionally, it will provide an opportunity for countries to exchange experiences and thoughts and potential solutions for dealing with the challenges brought about the rapid expansion of e-commerce and the ever-changing landscape of digital technologies. We are very, very fortunate today to have a panel of e-commerce experts with us here today and to share their knowledge and experience working on this very important topic. And we appreciate you participating and being here today to provide that insight. Special thank you or thanks to the Universal Postal Union for agreeing to provide the input today, and we have an expert speaker on the panel today to provide information on this very important issue. I am sure we are all looking forward to learning more about the postal security and initiatives to mitigate illicit trade of the postal pathway. I also would like to acknowledge and thank the IC team of e-commerce. I'd like to thank NAPO for positive participation, Kusabi and EPO, who partnered in IPPC with the IPPC Secretariat to co-organize this site session. I want to share with you my personal experience with e-commerce. About 3 or 4 years ago, I think the world witnessed unsolicited seed packages that were delivered in many countries around the world, and surprised all of us who were with the MPPOs and working in the plant health arena. Then, if I recall correctly, that number of unsolicited seed, very benign, it didn't really have any unintentional purpose, but it was business kind of transaction. I think the number was close to 600,000 packages that were delivered on via e-commerce. And you can imagine that really caused concern amongst several MPPOs. All those unsolicited packages had to be collected from private citizens and inspected and examined to make sure that would not present the biological concern that we all were surprised with. So I appreciated back then the opportunity to work in with colleagues from MPPOs, and this issue was addressed quite swiftly. And so hence the importance of continuing to work in e-commerce and come up with solution that can be implemented across the board. So with that, thank you again for being here, and we look forward to having a productive conversation. Thank you.
Thank you for the warm welcome and for introducing the topic for us for the side session today, Osama. We will now watch a short video that's titled Managing the Pest Risk Posed by E-commerce. If you could please start the video.
Did you know that e-commerce generates around 5,000 new parcels every second? That means 436 million parcels move around the world by mail or courier every day. And while most of these parcels do not pose a risk to plant health, some contain plants or plant products that may carry regulated pests that could have a devastating impact on agriculture and the environment. This is why the International Plant Protection Convention, IPPC, an intergovernmental treaty hosted by FAO within its strategic framework, has made e-commerce a priority. National Plant Protection Organizations, NPPOs, Customs Organizations, Mail and Courier Services, e-commerce platforms, sellers and buyers, all have a critical role to play when it comes to reducing the plant health risks associated with e-commerce.
National Plant Protection Organizations, or NPPOs, need to ensure that their phytosanitary import requirements are clear and readily available to all stakeholders, including sellers located in other countries. Working together with customs organizations is crucial to coordinate the timely inspection of high-risk parcels to ensure safe and uninterrupted global trade in plants and plant products. Non-intrusive inspection techniques can be used to screen large volumes of parcels in order to find those that contain seeds, plants, bulbs, insects or other regulated goods at the border. Mail and courier services also play a critical role. They must inform exporters that any plant material in the parcel must be clearly identified on the customs declaration form, and that some types of goods may be prohibited or restricted and require phytosanitary certificates by the importing country. When buying online, it's essential that buyers do the necessary research and only buy from reputable online businesses to ensure that the goods sold meet national import requirements. And buying from sellers located in the same country makes the process simpler, as no phytosanitary certificates are required. So it's crucial to think before you click. The newly published IPPC guide offers guidance to reduce the plant health risks associated with the international movement of parcels and keep e-commerce safe. By working together, we can facilitate the safe trade of plants and plant products, while preventing the introduction and spread of harmful pests that may be associated with online shopping.
So I hope you enjoyed that video. It's available on the International Phytosanitary Portal. It's a YouTube video, and it's available in English with subtitles to all six FAO official languages. Hopefully, we encourage you to share the video widely and to use it within your MPPO to raise awareness about e-commerce and the risks posed to plant health. So our first speaker today is Mr. Torvald Herza. He's a special advisor to the Director of Food and Consumer Product Safety Authority of the Netherlands and the official IPC contact point. And he oversees the export certification system and plays a key role in electronic certification processes. Thorwald is also very actively engaged in the Implementation and Capacity Development Committee, where he is a vice chair, and also the IC lead on e-commerce, among many other things. So, Thorwald.
Thank you for that introduction, Barbara, and welcome, colleagues, to this session. In this presentation, I will give a brief introduction to the challenges MPPOs experience in relation to e-commerce, the e-commerce supply chain, and the various IPPC resources on e-commerce and where to find them. There are many challenges, and I think many of you will be aware of them, that e-commerce poses. There is a huge volume of small parcels moving on the postal and courier pathway, often away from normal inspection points. There's direct sales to consumers, many new, casual, or infrequent sellers and buyers. There's often very limited information on the content of the parcels. The anonymity of internet, of course, makes it difficult to identify sellers. And there's also, to a certain degree, deliberate misrepresentation and fraud. So buyers may not be aware that the products they are purchasing originate in another country. The products, or the plants, may even originate in another country than the web shop. Sellers may not be aware of the import requirements of their customers' countries, or may choose to ship non-compliant goods on the assumption that most consignments will not be intercepted. The seller may consider seized consignment and associated fines to be a normal business cost. Now, these factors put pressure on the normal components of both phytosanitary export systems, for instance, inspection and export certification, and the import systems, risk-based intervention, inspection at the border, processing transactions, etc. We, for the purpose of the guide, we developed a diagram that depicts the e-commerce supply chain, and this diagram describes the e-commerce supply chain and the critical points in this chain. It all starts with a buyer purchasing plants or plant products on the internet. Often the buyer is not aware of the origin of the product that are being sold. Even if the buyer is aware of the nationality of the web shop, this does not mean that the plants originate also in that country. Now, the seller processes the order, and ideally the seller would check the import requirements of the country of destination, where the buyer is located, but in most cases they do not. Often knowingly or unknowingly, non-compliant plants are shipped. For instance, seeds without a phytosanitary certificate. The parcel is dispatched through a courier service or a postal service, and the seller should provide sufficient information to the courier service or postal service for the import declaration in the country of destination, but often the information provided is very limited, and customs do not always recognize regulated goods that should be stopped until cleared for import by the MPPO. Now, there are different IPPC resources on e-commerce. The infographic video we have just seen is available with subtitles in all FAO languages, as Barbara explained. This video and the other resources can be accessed through the International Phytosanitary Portal under strategic objectives. If you go to Plant Health and Safe Trade and then click on e-commerce, you will arrive to the e-commerce page. And on this page, you can see how the IPPC work on e-commerce relates to the strategic objectives of the IPPC and to which United Nations Sustainable Development Goals it contributes. This is a screenshot of the new e-commerce webpage. It contains some key facts and general information, the contribution to the Sustainable Development Goals, IPPC videos, the infographic we just saw in another video, link to IPPC guides on e-commerce, export certification and import verification, news articles relevant to e-commerce, and also the link to contributed resources. And contributed resources are relevant phytosanitary materials that were developed by an MPPO, RPPO, or another organization and shared with the international phytosanitary community. For instance, there are contributed resources from the World Customs Organization, the Universal Postal Union, and some MPPOs. And Mrs. Suzanne Patnode from the Universal Postal Union will later in this session explain how MPPOs can cooperate with the Universal Postal Union. If you have any interesting case studies, experiences, or procedures, or any other relevant material, please send them to the IPPC Secretariat, and they can be reviewed and, if appropriate, be published as contributed resource. Now, recently, the e-commerce guide was published. It's a guide to managing the pest risk posed by goods ordered online and distributed through postal and courier pathways. It identifies the key challenges faced by MPPOs. It provides practical guidance for improving cooperation and collaboration with key stakeholders. It highlights pre-border and border activities. It includes a diagram of a typical e-commerce supply chain that we just saw, and it contains several interesting country case studies. And the English version of the guide was published in October 23, and a Spanish translation will be available soon. We are still seeking partners to translate the guide to other official FAO languages. So if you are someone or you know someone with resources for translations, please come forward. And the guide contains information on e-commerce supply chain and, as I said, interesting case studies from various parts of the world that showcase challenges, practices, and experiences from MPPOs in dealing with e-commerce. Thank you.
Thank you, Torvald. Our next speaker is Bruno Gallant. Bruno is a senior legislative officer with the Canadian Food Inspection Agency in their Invasive Alien Species and Domestic Program sections. And one of the focuses of Bruno's work has been e-commerce, exploring ways to address pest risk, fostering collaboration among CFI's plant health, animal health, and food safety areas of business, and working with domestic and international partners and industry stakeholders. Bruno was also a member of the working group that drafted the 2023 IPPC e-commerce guide.
Does it work now?
Hello? Okay. thank you, Barbara, for the introduction and to be able to speak with you today about e-commerce. In particular, I'll be talking to you, as you can probably guess by the title of my presentation, I'll be talking to you about some of the work that the Canadian Food Inspection Agency have been doing to enhance awareness amongst Canadians about plant health risks associated to shopping online. And I'll be focusing on, Thorwald, you mentioned case studies. We had, Canada had provided one of the case studies, and I'll be focusing the presentation on the information found in that case study. So, So just a quick mention of who the Canadian Food Inspection Agency is. We have three main mandates, as you can see, not only on plant health, but to safeguard Canada's food supply and also to protect Canada's animal and plant health. Now, in relation to plant health, the CFIA is Canada's National Plant Protection Organization and accordingly has the objectives to protect Canada's agriculture and forestry sectors and natural resources from plant pests. So it accomplishes these objectives through various means, including with the implementation of our Canadian Plant Protection Act. So this act provides us with the powers and authorities to prevent the introduction, export, and spread of pests, for example, through the regulation of products that pose a plant health threat. So whether products are sold online or not.
Is there a direction? No, it's that's okay, sorry.
Towards the
okay. Thank you.
Now, for the same reasons essentially expressed elsewhere, whether within the IPPC guide that's referenced by Thorwald or by through World Custom Organization and other documents that have been published. I mean, for us, the main e-commerce challenges are not so much about the lack of authorities. We have authorities, like I mentioned, to deal with trade, whether it's online or not, but rather in a climate where the consumer or our public now has a more direct role in purchasing or in the import process and have relatively easy access to products from around the world. Our challenges principally concern our ability to ensure compliance and enforce our plant protection requirements. And more specifically, and as already mentioned, so e-commerce has resulted in a high volume of products in the postal and courier streams, which some of these present plant health risks such as seeds. And various factors complicate our efforts, ranging from resource limitations and interest for getting things quickly through the border to limited information about novel products and where they may be coming from. And to add to the complexity, based on a polling that we conducted, the public generally does not have a great appreciation of the plant protection rules and also who is responsible for ensuring compliance with these rules when shopping online. Compliance is often not checked beforehand before clicking on that purchase button, and with the result that what they may be getting may be more than what they're bargaining for, essentially. So to try to counterbalance these challenges, the CFIA embarked on an awareness-raising campaign starting in 2021, with the objectives to raise awareness of our plant protection rules, of the risks certain products can present to plant health, and of the consumer roles, the consumer's role as an importer and the responsibilities that are tied to that role. In other words, we try to instill, I guess if you will, a moment of pause or of caution or diligence before one clicks on that purchase button. So we did this through a few means, one being through paid advertisement campaigns and also organically via social media messaging and the creation of web content. So as you see here, you see in front of you the some of the websites that we created and also part of the web content that you would have found in some of the information that was circulated as part of this awareness campaign. So the advertisement component consisted of ads on pages that the viewer could click for more information, such as the button or the one on the top right-hand corner. So they could click there for more information. And also included a search engine marketing strategy, which is basically a means of promoting your ad in response to web content which someone is searching from their home or from wherever else. In other words, rather than being on the bottom of a page, you're trying to be on the top of the page. So we tried to promote that messaging through those means, which were through our advertisement campaign. So, and the next slide, I'll just show you a GIF. Which was part of the campaign as well. And I actually recently learned that GIF is actually short or an acronym for graphic interchange format. So, but don't ask me what that means. Just let's take a look. It's just a couple seconds. Actually, hopefully, okay. Oh, sorry. So now it's just repeating, but so you get the idea. So that's something that we produced and was part of our campaign. And the results. So the campaign was generally considered a success. Now, this data I should mention, and I think I forgot to mention it early on, the advertising campaign was not limited to plant health within the CFIA. It also encompassed animal health and the food safety branches of our agency. So this data that it also comprises those components, but overall, based on a two-month period, it resulted in over 300,000 people clicking on our ad, so looking for more information, which is good, and also to over 100 million impressions, so meaning basically appearances on various forums or platforms and through social media. So, and plant ads seemed to be one of the components that worked the best, which was likely due to the timing of the campaign, which ran in February and March, and when people in Canada are essentially planning for what to plant in the spring. So it was perhaps the relevancy of the information which was being shared that increased, I guess, the success of the plant component. And while we hope that the campaign translated or will translate into consumers taking, you know, extra precautions, there remains factors out there that present obstacles to achieving perhaps meaningful changes through messaging. And I've listed a few. I'm not going to go through just for time considerations, but I'll just end on a few of these points. So the counterbalancing promotion and appeal of e-commerce. So from what we learned, reasons Canadians shop online are numerous and include product availability, novelty, the convenience, the price, and so, which are by no means trivial and hard to argue against. So definitely the popularity is there, and it's expected to continue in that fashion. So another challenge is that while we may be able to raise awareness, the question is whether it will actually translate into concrete changes or to the taking of precautions among the consumer public. So this is perhaps relevant to, I guess, plant health impacts as a whole, but how to make the messaging tangible, I guess, relatable and a real concern to someone. So so understanding the importance is one thing, but enough that it makes one want to do something about it is perhaps another. So that's another consideration, that, you know, we can produce these materials, but how can we maximize the impact of these materials and affect change? So in a word on leadership, which I listed as a challenge but could also be essentially an opportunity, but e-commerce challenges are by no means, certainly not restricted to plant health. Many regulators face these same challenges. However, because of the nature of the issue, it doesn't really fit into a nice little box with solid borders. There does not appear to be, how would I say that, a lead, you know, with a big A, if you will. So, and which underscores the importance, perhaps, of seeking partnerships, collaborations on the e-commerce messaging in an attempt to strengthen common messages, like, for example, make sure this is legal before purchasing it. Things like that, that really applies to a lot of the products that we regulate, and hopefully achieve bigger gains that way. So I'll stop there, but just to say I focused my presentation, like I said, on the case study, which was included in the guide, but noting that we did run the campaign for 3 different years, and that we continue the CFIA to focus on trying to build that awareness through various means of the importance of preserving and plant health, essentially. So, and again, thank you again for allowing me to speak today about e-commerce, and thank you.
Thank you, Bruno. Just so everyone knows, we will have time for questions to all the panelists after the presentations. Our next presentation, our next speaker is Peter Thompson. I'm sure most of you know Peter. He's been working with the IPPC Secretariat, or the IPPC, since 2003, and has been very involved in co-leading the development of the strategic framework, and also doing a lot of work on IPPC e-phyto solution. Unfortunately, that also means that he needs to leave for the Friends of the Chair meeting shortly. So if you have any questions for Peter, hopefully you can track him down during this week. Thank you.
All right, well, thank you. I'm really pleased to be able to share a few of New Zealand's experiences in the e-commerce space. I don't imagine that the experiences we have had are unique, but perhaps the way we've dealt with them might provide something useful for yourselves in your own countries. Can we have the slides? Oh, there they are. Okay. Point where? Okay, point over there. I should have known that. So we'll go back. Okay, so, this isn't news. E-commerce poses a significant challenge, and what we're seeing in New Zealand is what you will be seeing. The volume is increasing, and the complexity is increasing too. When we first started dealing with e-commerce issues back in 2019, started dealing with them seriously, we were mainly looking at e-commerce coming from major platforms through traditional parcel avenues. Now we are looking at e-commerce coming through adverts on social media platforms, arriving by air freight, and then being distributed using Uber deliveries. And so it's becoming more and more difficult to tackle these challenges. And so what I wanted to highlight today was the need for a multi-pronged approach to managing the pest risks associated with e-commerce. And for us, different methods of cooperation and collaboration have been the key. And that started with the appointment of a single person across our entire ministry who has responsibility for coordinating all e-commerce activities across the ministry. That's made a huge difference in our efforts. So these are the three areas that I want to focus on: cooperation with e-commerce platforms, cooperation between MPPOs, and cooperation of and with the public. So the first case study is quite an interesting one. I think I've gone one too far, have I? No. Oh, I'm missing a case study. That's all right, so I'll stay there. The first case study is an interesting one. It involves a person who imported plants from another country. The plants arrived with soil on their roots, and of course the individual who had imported the product had no idea what the phytosanitary requirements were. They didn't know that New Zealand prohibits imports of plants with soil. So we made contact with the operator of the platform where they had ordered them from. And we got a typical response to our inquiries. And that was that they were distressed that they had sent us something risky and were very keen to fix the issue. And so within days, the e-commerce platform had made a change to their site so that if somebody from New Zealand was trying to order, it showed that the product was out of stock. Yeah, and that was a simple way that they were able to respond really quickly. It happened that the platform had not even considered the phytosanitary risks of sending products to another country. They had requirements for sending products to different states in their country, but not to another country outside. So they found it a useful exercise, and of course we did too. What made a difference for us was that we now have standard procedures to follow, templates to use, standardised letters that we can send to e-commerce platforms and just tailor them for the situation. And we also are building relationships with representatives on many, many of the e-commerce platforms. And so having those processes and templates and standard letters makes it a much simpler thing. And so if you don't have something like that, I would really encourage you to do that. So the next example is about these moss balls that I had never come across. So this was a consumer in New Zealand who placed an order online for these moss balls. And after placing the order, they realised, through reading some articles, that they were prohibited. And so they tried to stop their order. But, of course, it was too late. They couldn't stop their order. And so they contacted MPI as the EPPO, and we attempted to contact the platform as well, and got no response at all. And so this second aspect of cooperation with other MPPOs was critical to our success here. We were able to go to the contact point of the MPPO. They put us in touch with the right people. The MPPO went and talked to the platform themselves. Being in the same country, I think maybe the platform realised there was more of an issue than just a little old New Zealand talking to them. And they were able to halt the order and sort things out. So we are now finding that this collaboration with other MPPOs, and some of you, your staff will have had contact with us, is critical in the management of these e-commerce risks. And we're able now not just to go through the IPPC contact point, but we're developing lists within these countries of the people who we can talk to directly. I guess the other thing that was critical here was the pest and disease hotline that we run that made it easy for the member of the public to contact us and notify us of the issue. The last case study that I wanted to share is focusing on this cooperation with the public. And this is an example of a member of the public who imported seed from another country without any idea that there were phytosanitary requirements. The seed they the country they imported the seed from, the platform didn't have any requirements to meet, or didn't know about our requirements to meet. And so this first batch of seed from the other country was intercepted at the border and destroyed, and the platform was notified. But there were multiple orders that had been made of these seeds, and they just kept coming through and coming through. And so by engaging with the member of the public, they were able to continue to notify us whenever these seeds were arriving to wash up the backlog. What I guess the lesson for us from this was that we have tried really hard to take an educative approach rather than an enforcement approach. Yeah, and by taking that educative approach, it meant that the member of the public did not have any fears about contacting us and telling us that they'd ordered more stuff and that there was more on the way. And so that made a real difference for us. And of course, once again, the platform was really willing to make some changes and even put up new videos that made it clear that there were phytosanitary requirements for New Zealand. So those are a few quick examples. I hope that's been helpful to hear not just the examples, but how we have tried to embed things into our system to make sure that we're managing this as well as we can. I don't think we're ever going to manage all of the phytosanitary risk associated with this, but we can do what we can do. And if we work together, it's going to be a better result for all of us. Thank you.
Thank you, Peter. Our next speaker is Rosina Lech, and Rosina works for the NPPO of Argentina. She's the manager of SENASA's Digital Media Monitoring and Control Program, and is responsible for strategic planning and project development and implementation, and she collaborates closely with both the public and private sectors to promote responsible e-commerce trade of products that are regulated by SENASA.
Buenas tardes, gracias, Barbara.
Thank you, Barbara. Good afternoon, everyone. It's a great honor for me to be here with you. I'm going to tell you how an idea was transformed into a project and how a project became an institutional program without any precedence in the region. In March of 2023, it was actually selected by the Animal Health Organization as a successful story and invited the replication of this. My name is Rosina Leiza, and I'm responsible for the SANASA program in Argentina. And in the next few minutes, what I'm going to try to do is to explain and share in a very simple and clear manner how we were able to develop a case that throughout all of these years has tried to encompass one of the most important and fastest growing segments. And I'm talking, of course, about electronic commerce. Internationally. In 2018, the mails of different users and platforms started to accumulate and grow in number. And so we understood in SANASA that we had to intervene rapidly and start to monitor the products of our competence that circulated on the web. With this new challenge, just a minute, I've got a few problems here. I was saying that with this great universe to explore, there were two parallel questions that came up. For what should we implement this and for whom? And of course, in order to be able to protect online consumers, to help our country, and to protect the quality and safety of our foods. Also, as a food control body, this is part and parcel of our work in Argentina, and it's not an option to do otherwise. We also believe that strengthening the link between state and citizens for more secure digital environments would be helpful. The second question that came up was a little bit more complex and more difficult to address, and it was, how are we going to work? So we realized that we had before us a huge challenge in a globalized world with people who are more demanding and more informed. And so the approach had to be interdisciplinary. Nobody could do it on their own. And therefore, we started to propose our idea to the private and public sector in Argentina, and we started to talk about it. The response was very gratifying, because today we are a team of more than 15 organizations, both in public and private sector, and we all work for the same cause and for a common goal. Some companies in the private sector, well, I can't really actually tell you about all of them, but in the public sector, we work with Adon Argentina, elbow to elbow with the official mail system and a network information center, which is a register of a domain for our country. We also work with IMPI, which is the national organization for intellectual property, and we also work with AFI, which regulates all of the taxes paid by the population that pay taxes in Argentina. Also, the National Administration of Food Technology and Medical Drugs, and in the private sector, we have more. In 2019, we closed a mutual agreement. It was the largest platform in Latin America, and it's present in 18 countries now. This was the first agreement with SANASA, and this was the first door and experience that gave us access to e-commerce. 2 years later, we also were able to sign an agreement with Instagram and Facebook. They started to work with us on a daily basis. Every single day, we monitor we report, and we moderate contents that are of our competence. And then Yopi, which is a very large company in Southeast Asia that works with us in Argentina. Then Enyamia, it's concerns digital enterprises, and it's been valued at over $1 trillion. Then there's another cross-border company, which is the largest in the world. Why am I telling you all this? Well, Enyamia works with a whole catalog of products together with Macy's and Amazon. It has over 1 billion items in its stock, and it's got one particular feature. It's one of the healthiest sites I know, and it has disabled the option of buying seeds or plants or agrochemical products or fertilizers or veterinary products, amongst other categories. Then the largest company, LG, and then the Argentinian Chamber for Electronic Digital services that groups together thousands of digital companies. And then another company, which is a register of companies in Argentina. And we share a lot of information whenever we detect products that might be violating the norms and standards. This is a huge network of collaboration, thanks to which we can have access to the various digital channels, and we can provide an early report of things. We believe that prevention is the most important element, because trying to remedy the situation further down the line takes a lot of work and resources. We've been working on this almost for 5 years now, and we have detected and up to now, of course. So the number I will share with you, I'm sure, is actually going to be smaller than it will be in an hour. 377,000 published violations. And so because of these violations, products are no longer being made available to buyers. So this shows that monitoring works. Reports and publications over time have decreased considerably. We would like to encourage and invite all countries who wish to begin working on this interdisciplinary approach to e-commerce, because it is accessible and it has zero additional budget costs, and it's beneficial to all involved. In Senas Argentina, we would like to make our skills and knowledge available to all those who wish to begin to work on this matter simply by taking this first step. Lastly, before I conclude, I would like to very warmly and especially thank my team, Ramiro, Rocio, Angeles, and Claudio, because they work every single day, 8, 9, 10 hours. They monitor the web day in and day out to generate this amazing result and this concrete positive result. They are the ones who help me think about new projects and new initiatives. And they're not like me. They're much better than me. And I'm grateful to have them by my side, because they teach me that the best is yet to come if we were together. And so to those of you who wish to jump on the bandwagon, I say, do not be afraid. Take the first step, and we will be there to help you if need be. Thank you.
Thank you, Rosina, for such an inspiring presentation. and for offers to advise others on how to move forward. Our next presentation is actually by video. We have a presentation by Julie Hong Sikowski. She's not able to attend the meeting today in Rome, so she sent us a video. Julie is the National Operations Manager of the United States Department of Agriculture in their Smuggling Interdiction and Trade Compliance Program, which is called CITSE. Julie is also the team lead of the Plant Health Quadrilateral e-commerce working group, and she contributed to the IPPC e-commerce guide. She holds a master's degree in bioterrorism and emerging infectious diseases from Georgetown University and is currently completing a six-month-long detail as an advisor for the White House Initiative on Asian Americans, Native Hawaiians, and Pacific Islanders. If I could please ask AV to please run the video, we will just hear Julie's voice and see her slides, unfortunately, but at least we can hear from her. Thank you.
Good afternoon. My name is Julie Hong Sikowski, and I'm the National Operations Manager for the Smuggling Interdiction and Trade Compliance Program, operating under the Plant Protection and Quarantine Branch of the United States Department of Agriculture. For today's session, I'll be discussing agricultural smuggling in the United States with an emphasis on e-commerce. The presentation will start with an introduction to the mission of the USDA Animal and Plant Health Inspection Service, Plant Protection and Quarantine, Smuggling Interdiction and Trade Compliance Program, known as CITSE, and the CITSE Internet Team. We'll discuss the challenges experienced by the U.S. in addressing agricultural smuggling, the evolution of monitoring e-commerce, and the team's collaborative work with companies that engage in e-commerce. CITSE's mission is to stop the entry and distribution of prohibited or restricted foreign agriculture to prevent the entry of invasive pests and diseases. CITSE has a presence in every state and territory of the United States. In addition to field officers, the program houses a group of operational analysts led by the National Operations Manager. A subsection of the analysts comprise the CITSE Internet Team. The Internet Team plays a dual role in national program support and monitoring e-commerce platforms for illegal movement of agricultural materials. The challenges of addressing agricultural smuggling have evolved since the CITSE program was created in 2001. The program was initially established to address smuggled agricultural items that had evaded detection at the port of entry. Program officers conducted surveillance and compliance activities with the aid of operational analysts who provided intelligence and data analysis support. Modernized internet facilitated the movement of illicit goods, creating direct consumer access to materials overseas. Businesses that trade imported goods also had easier access to acquire products through diverse channels and to quickly identify popular trends in a mother country to cater to diaspora communities. The CITSE Internet Team was formed in 2010 to address this pathway. The team established partnerships early on with large e-commerce platforms such as Amazon, eBay, and Etsy. These partnerships helped gain vendor compliance and identify domestic recipients of smuggled agricultural material. The platforms often require sellers to operate under the laws of their respective countries. Most platforms are interested in cooperating with regulatory agencies, and some have dedicated staff and websites for users to submit requests for information. Over time, opportunities for both legal and illegal agricultural movement have increased. For example, some social media platforms allow users to buy, sell, or trade from any location in the world. Additionally, mobile applications have made it possible to communicate with buyers and sellers across the globe. A challenge faced by all enforcement agencies are privacy requirements for users of platforms and mobile applications. Privacy laws exist to prevent unauthorized access to personally identifiable information. Some users take advantage of these laws to conduct illegal transactions under multiple aliases. In some cases, CITSE has identified stolen identities of U.S. residents used by foreign vendors to gain domestic commercial access. CITSE has also observed fake company names on entry documents aligned with unaffiliated e-commerce vendors, and the use of multiple shipping labels to hide the identity of the importer. The use of couriers has further hampered the ability of customs officials to detect smaller smuggled items. A common strategy observed is a change in destination address while the package is in transit. Another tactic is hiding many small boxes with different destinations within larger packages. In 2017, the internet team observed the increasing use of public and private groups enabled by direct or private messaging to facilitate movement of agricultural materials. Direct messaging allows users to find other like-minded individuals, whether in hobbyist groups or buy-sell trade forums. Once a connection is made, users can choose to conduct transactions through DMs hidden from public view. Prior to this, the internet team was successful in investigating individuals conducting transactions on public virtual spaces. That success led some users to be more discreet. Seed trains were a trend that was observed at this time. Seeds can move internationally easily as they are small and can be packaged discreetly. The internet team observed public discussions involving obtaining permits and certificates, indicating that many participants were aware of the import requirements of the various nations they resided in. Some discussions involved how to skirt customs agents, obtain false certificates, packaging tricks to evade detection, and other such topics. MOA applications present another issue. Apps allow the exchange of information away from public view and on mobile devices. Government officials have faced difficulty investigating claims of private transactions conducted over mobile apps. Most companies require a subpoena or warrant to share information with law enforcement agencies. The internet team has had some success in cases where a user brags on social media about a successful smuggling event. CITSI uses law enforcement tools to identify the violator and send a trace to their location. The receiving officer will investigate and seize any non-compliant regulated materials. In 2020, the United States experienced a countrywide brushing phenomenon. It was determined that the incident was peripherally related to use of certain e-commerce platforms. Through interviews, CITSI staff learned that many recipients of unsolicited products stated their package was sent from a vendor who they had previously transacted with. Others reported they had signed up for a free gift on a particular website and didn't realize until later that the gift was plant material. The brushing incident was not isolated to agricultural material. Other items reported included sunglasses, hats, toilet paper, keychains, and other items. AFIS negotiated with three of the larger e-commerce platforms at this time, Amazon, eBay, and Etsy. The companies agreed to build internal filters to restrict U.S. buyer access to agricultural products for sale by foreign vendors. The success of this agreement can be seen in the reduced number of traces sent. The internet team conducts regular sweeps of these platforms to ensure products are not slipping through established filters. Vendors have used various methods to bypass the system, such as intentional misspelling of product names and using non-English common names. These sweeps ensure non-compliant materials are identified and removed from view. The team's focus has evolved from monitoring third-party sellers to include social media platforms and mobile applications. CITSI is currently engaged with Meta to gain access to their consumer policy channel. The CPC will allow the CITSI program to report prohibited agricultural products offered for sale in Meta's commercial space, including Facebook Marketplace, Instagram, and WhatsApp. This concludes my presentation on addressing agricultural smuggling and the impact of e-commerce in the United States. Thank you for your time.
Thank you, Julie, for that terrific presentation. And Julie indicated to me that if anyone has any questions for her, that you could please email them to me, and I will put you in contact with her to answer questions. Thank you. Our final speaker before our question period is Susan Patnode. Susan represents the Universal Postal Union as an expert who is focused on safety and security matters relating to the International Postal Service. She brings extensive leadership experience from her career within the U.S. government, where she held positions in aviation security, hazardous materials, physical security, investigative support operations, and emergency management. Thank you, Susan.
Thank you, Barbara. Thank you to everyone for inviting the Universal Postal Union to address you today. Having been established in 1874 in Bern, Switzerland, where they still reside today, the Universal Postal Union is the second oldest intergovernmental organization, second only to the International Telecommunications Union. The UPU became a United Nations specialized agency in 1948 and currently supports the United Nations missions through close relationships and joint activities with other UN organizations. With its 192 member countries, UPU is the primary forum for cooperation between postal sector players. They set the rules for international mail exchanges and make recommendations to stimulate mail growth, packages growth, financial services, volumes growth, and improve the quality of service for our customers. The postal sector remains a critical element in the global ecosystem, transcending borders to connect people, businesses, and governments. It not only facilitates communication, but also serves as the backbone for trade and logistics. So when the UPU first started in 1874, its 22 member countries made up the largest physical delivery network. Now, with 192 nations, it truly is universal. Worldwide, the global postal network employs about 5 million people and in 670,000 postal units. They move annually roughly 300 million pieces of mail a year and 9 million packages. So remarkably, 80% of the world's populations do receive mail delivered directly to their homes. So it's a big network. So the mail moves in a variety of ways, as you might imagine. The most common are via rail, via air, by sea, and over the road. So the UPU's Postal Technology Center is integral to ensure an efficient flow of postal items through its network. The postal supply chain is a complex physical and virtual network moving mail from origin to destination with the associated data. Each origin, transit, and destination operator has its own supply chain and its own rules that govern how the mail moves domestically. But when they move and turn to the international mail operations, they must integrate its offerings. So let's take a look at this mail flow to kind of introduce it to you. I'm sure it's not quite as big as we might want it, but so we break this into three legs when we're talking about the international mail flow. The first leg is comprised of the collection and outbound operations, so taking it from the origin and moving it through the system. Leg two is the international transportation, moving it from one international location to another. Leg three is the inbound and delivery operations from operator to the delivery unit. So if we look at this chart here, you can see that a sender will come into a postal or retail facility, mail their package. It will move to a distribution center and on to an international mail center and or office of exchange, where it will be handled by the air mail unit and then shipped either via air or over the road to the designating air mail unit. And then the process is in reverse. So it goes from the air mail unit to the processing center and on to the delivery office. Underpinning all of that activity are electronic messages being traded about those packages. We heard about some of that today from some of our other speakers. So we also heard about the courier services. And just so to be clear, we want to highlight some of the differences between a designated operator and a courier service within a country. So the designated operators have been appointed by their governments to operate on their behalf, and they must comply with regulations in the UPU Convention. Express couriers do not have to comply with that. Likewise, the designated operators must uphold the universal service options, and they must comply with that, while couriers do not have to do that. All right, so let's move on. All right. UPU recognizes that safety and security of the postal sector as part of the global supply chain is critical to supporting worldwide commerce and communication. To facilitate the development and implementation of security standards, the UPU established the Postal Security Group. They are charged with the development of global and regional security strategies to assist the world's posts with their security missions. Through training initiatives, consultative missions, prevention programs, the PSG strives to protect employees, customers, and assets of posts, and to safeguard mail fraud from fraud, theft, and misuse. So let's look at some of the priorities of the PSG. We want to prevent injury to people during the carriage of goods through the mail. We want to prevent the loss or theft of mail entrusted to the posts. We actively work to prevent the loss of revenue by posts and preserve the customer confidence in the post. So we do that in a variety of ways, but training and capacity building is a key way that we do that. So what you see on this slide is some of the training areas that we focus on: emergency planning and risk assessment, airport security coordination, quality of service reviews, countering drug trafficking and money laundering through the post, procedures for accepting and controlling dangerous goods in the post, and international postal revenue protection. So how do we do that? The organization has been working to build capacity to ensure the security of the postal supply chain for many years. They adopted S58 and S59 to define the minimum physical and process security requirements applicable to critical facilities within the postal network, and to define the minimum requirements for securing operations relating to the transport of international mail. Designated operators who are able to demonstrate compliance with these regulations can request to be certified. Since its inception, 29 countries have been certified as having met those standards. So what you're looking at is a chart of the countries who have been certified, either gold, silver, or equivalency. An equivalency is a designation that a country can request if they meet certain standards through WHO or their civil aviation authority. They can appeal to have the UPU recognize them with certification. So the S58, to lay that out for you a little bit, is really about the security, physical security methods. So it would be windows, doors, access control, training, lighting, things of that nature, ensuring that the people who are letting visitors in know who should gain access to whatever areas of the facility. S59, on the other hand, really takes a look at the aviation exchange of international mail and focuses on ensuring that the people who handle that know what a high-risk item is, know how to identify suspicious items, and what to do when they do identify them. So in addition to capacity building and training, we also have appointed some special expert teams that provide focus and additional attention on particular areas. So road safety expert team is one of UPU's teams. The lithium batteries, equipment contained in lithium batteries, and then also the illicit goods mitigation expert team. Barbara recently addressed our expert team at the UPU. So I'm going to talk a little bit about illicit goods because that most closely relates to your mission here. So the UPU is focused on raising awareness and sensitization campaigns for both the posts and their customers. We try to identify the need for bespoke training developed by UPU to target the designated operators. We maintain partnerships with other organizations who specialize in various types of illicit goods, and we share information and best practices with our designated operators. We work to focus on gray market, wildlife, and pharmaceuticals and medical devices. So we are currently partnering with some folks to put together a toolkit that will enable our DOs to readily recognize some illicit goods in the system and be able to take particular actions that we request them to. So along with our internal work and focus items, we also maintain some key partnerships. And those key partnerships can be informal, or they may be more formalized through agreements, memorandums of understanding, and contact committees. So the UPU at this point has a contact committee with the World Customs Organization, the International Civil Aviation Authority, and IATA. So let's look at some of the benefits of those partnerships. We developed a guide with INCB and UPU on practical guidance for the Postal Service and express couriers on the prevention and interdiction of non-medical synthetic opioids when the safety issues were raised with those items moving through the mail. We've worked with ICAO to develop a dangerous goods campaign that enables posts around the world to download materials and use them in their communities and with their customers. It included posters, flyers, and videos, and a special focus on counterfeit and pirated goods. We also developed some training with those groups for our designated operators so that they are able to readily identify dangerous goods in the mail and know what steps to take. And then we have a robust relationship with World Customs Organization, as I understand that you have had some great relationship with them as well. The UPU has worked to grow that relationship so that customs organizations understand the role of the Postal Service in identifying illicit goods, as well as postal operators understanding the role of customs. Now, we talked a little bit about the data underpinning the mail flow, and so I just want to highlight this again, that this is a pretty important aspect to the mail flow initiatives. We do embrace technology within the Universal Postal Union and posts worldwide and encourage that in order to improve and keep people safe and secure. So DOs are required to capture and exchange electronic advanced data for international post items containing goods in order to comply with specific import, customs, and security requirements of member countries. We continue to update this model as is necessary with our partners, as well as improve the underlying technology that it is built on. Again, along the theme of technology, we are in the process of building a dangerous goods search tool. This tool is under development, and we hope to pilot it in the next couple of months. This tool will enable us to integrate some of the UPU systems that currently exist, and as well as interface with external systems from parties who are active in identifying and dismantling illegal traffic, such as INCB and Interpol. Later, we are hoping that this tool will also be a venue where we can identify illicit goods being tracked and traced. So we continue to train our folks, and of course I've talked a little bit about dangerous goods and postal security, advanced security, transportation, and custom operations. That's some of our current offerings, and we have 20 courses in development relating to dangerous goods, mail theft, and misuse of the postal supply chain. So we are encouraged by our relationship with IPPC. We again thank you for allowing us to come and present to you today, and Barbara has attended one of our meetings, but we also invite you and encourage you to provide us tips and information that we can use through our vehicles, whether it be our expert teams, our toolkits that we're developing, or information that we can share on the UPU website. All right. And we also invite you to look at the UPU website, if you have not, for the customs declarations compendium and the prohibitions. I'm sure some of you are familiar with that, but we encourage you to utilize that in your work and let us know if you have any questions in that regard. And finally, I want to thank you all again for allowing us to come and present today.
Thank you very much, Susan, for that really interesting presentation. I think we all learned a lot about the Postal Service. I mean, everyone thinks they know what the Postal Service is and does, but that really opened my eyes on the scope of the work that's being done. So that concludes the formal presentations that we have. We wanted to have time for questions and answers and to open the floor to all of you. To ask questions that you might have. So perhaps we'll start and see if there are any questions on the floor, from the floor, if you would like to. Do we have any questions? Otherwise, I will ask a few. So to start out, perhaps I'll ask a question of Bruno. What do you see as the single biggest challenge in your work on e-commerce?
Thanks, Barbara. I would have to say time, in that not time to work. The advantages and the promotion of e-commerce, it's powerful, right? So, and the, like I mentioned during my presentation, the ease of which and the accessibility of the platform. So it's moving so fast, but we need to counterbalance that with, and I'm taking the more the awareness building sort of stance, but trying to instill or into the consciousness, if you will, the importance of plant health as a whole, so that, you know, it becomes in a way normalized. So it is, that's why I say time is a challenge in that sense, because we're working against technology that's just moving quite quickly. And I think Julie, in her presentation from the U.S., sort of went through the a bit of the history of what they dealt with, and you saw during those years that the technology has changed and they have adapted, but that won't stop, right? So so time would be my, what I would say.
I see we have a question there, or I think we do. Is that the red light? Please go ahead.
Yes. Thank you, and thank you for all the presentations that have been given here today. My question would go specifically to Bruno. I was wondering, because I think that your system is based, or your presentation was based mainly on awareness raising, and is there kind of a follow-up system or a tool that you have in Canada to quantify in a way the effect of this awareness on maybe the behavioral patterns or the changes that would take place later? Thank you.
No, thank you for the question. And we did follow up in trying to get an understanding of how many in Canada had viewed those sites and trying to get information of as much as we could in terms of
if it had made a difference, let's say. Do they recall seeing the ads during that two-month period? How many clicked? So we accumulated that data, and from what we understood, generally Canadians understand the importance of plant health, but not so much about the rules and the requirements surrounding that and the roles and responsibilities. So that in itself is information that you know helps us tailor our further awareness and where we should target the messaging in particular. But associated to that, I guess the data gathering. And I was interested this morning, Barbara, you were mentioning during your during the CPM, the observatory creating a baseline of information and. In a lot of ways, getting better data around these things. What is the nature of the problem? Where's the problematic components of the products that are coming in, so that we are maybe better able, let's say, to target audiences? Because I mentioned within our advertisement campaigns and the awareness of big consideration was, well, who exactly should we be targeting? How do we reach those people that we don't know? So there is that. I think with better data and a better, consolidation and systems that speak with each other, we may, I'm thinking we could get in a better position to evaluate the impacts. If we come back to the question, evaluate those impacts. That the campaigns are having. So we're not completely there yet. We don't have all the answers, but it's so. In other words, we made some headway, but there's still more to be done. So.
Thank you. Yeah, I see the challenge. You can raise awareness, but how do you get that to change behavior? That might be two different things sometimes. Was there another question? Nico, did you have a question?
Microphone. Is my microphone on?
Yes.
Yeah. Thank you, Barbara, and thank you for the speakers. It's very nice to have heard the experience in different countries. We also see that there have been changes over time. So you can address it at the point of the platforms. You can address it as the point of the public, the customers, but also so the social media plays a role. So what if there is an MPPO that has no program yet and they are about to start a program? Where should they start, and what kind of tips could you give them? That's a general question for the whole panel, because there are different approaches. Thank you.
Did you want to start, Toril?
Yes, thank you. Thank you for that question, Nico. Without wanting to start self-promoting, but have a look at the guide, I would say. And... No, but I think one of the most important things is to seek cooperation, because this is a problem that does not only affect MPPOs, and the problem stretches out beyond the normal scope of work of MPPOs. So I think there are some crucial partners out there that you need to seek cooperation with, both on government side, like customs, but also on private industry side, like courier services, platforms, etc. If you're starting, it does not need to be perfect and 100% coverage at once, but start with a small pilot project and see what works and what does not work in your country, and then build it out. That would be my advice.
Was there a question, Diego, please?
Sí, muchas gracias.
Thanks very much, Barbara. I was thinking that Well, going back to what Rosina said, this is a cross-cutting issue. It involves different areas. And, well, several government areas for sure, from health, obviously, plant health, animal health, safety, but also other areas of government. And I was thinking that, well, this week we're looking at how to get more involved in the One Health concept. And so perhaps that might be the way forward. That's how to raise awareness. One of the activities within the actions that we want to undertake within the One Health approach, we could relate that and also involve other bodies and organizations. That's just a thought. Thank you.
Thank you. That's a very good suggestion, and we will take note of it. Did anyone else have any comments or want to share an experience that they have with e-commerce in their own country or ask a question of one of the panelists? Well, I'll ask a question of Susan. What tips can you offer to national plant protection organizations that want to work more closely with their designated postal operator, specifically on plant health concerns? Like, you mentioned that there was this compendium of prohibitions compendium, and
thank you for the question, Barbara. Yeah, there are things that you can do, of course. Visit the UPU site where the compendium exists, but we would also encourage you to talk with your local post to ensure that they're posting their prohibitions, because the tool is only as good as the information that exists on it. So that would be one thing. Relationship building, and I think that was already said, that is really just key, building those initial relationships with the post and with your customs authorities. And hosting meetings and trainings that involve everyone sitting down together to really understand each other's operations. Always working towards data sharing and collaborating to kind of close that loop when things are found. They have the ability to backtrack and find out where the problems lie and how everybody could do a little bit better in the process.
Thank you, Susan. I have a question for Rosina as well. How important is monitoring? Your presentation talked a lot about monitoring the internet and collecting data in order to help MPPOs address the pest risk. Can you provide some concrete examples of how monitoring has been effective in supporting Argentina's work on e-commerce?
Thank you, Susan, for your question. I think that it's really a crucial point, because personally I think that the only way of knowing and of having a good strategy is to know exactly where we are. I'm very obsessed with numbers, monitoring and volume. But let me go back to something. I was talking to you about our work, and I was telling you that we have 377,435 publications of infractions. Well, that number has gone up since I was talking to you. Statistics and numbers tell us exactly where we are, how we're doing, which area of the country is mostly affected by infractions, and generate a comprehensive approach with the different areas, like veterinarian doctors and medical practitioners and everybody, all the stakeholders that are involved. We don't regulate only plant health, but we also regulate animal health and any issue having to do with food quality and safety. We started our work 5 years ago, and this year we completed 100% of the products that are regulated by norms and standards. So it took us 5 years to have a comprehensive approach, but that's how to do it, according to us. Every year we started disclosing massive publications to our consumers, informing them about the regulatory framework that regulates each activity, commercial activity. Then we started with monitoring, and we left a window of time in order for consumers or even salespeople to get close to Sanasa and ask us about the information that we had in order to be able to become aware of the regulatory framework. I think that in all the papers that this has come up, and this is really cross-cutting. It concerns chemical substances, food, and pet food, and plants. What is cross-cutting is the lack of knowledge on the part of the consumers at large. They don't know what to do or what to look out for, and so that's what we need to work on, is to provide information and generate information and the right channels to make sure that the data gets to the consumers in the right time. And of course, the state has to do its part. It has to be efficient. We do need to generate the public and private partnerships, which I think are completely essential to have comprehensive approaches. Sometimes, you know, we can't get everywhere because the postal operator has to do their work, and customs authorities and Facebook and Instagram have to do theirs. So we have to rally all the forces together and get the cooperation of everybody to get the message across. Personally, I talk to people that I mentioned in my presentation, representing the private companies and the public authorities as well, and we were never turned down. We asked everybody for help, and we got everyone's support. Everybody's interested, obviously, in generating safer and more reliable digital channels. It is possible. If you like, I can actually share some data with you, some statistics, in order for you to be able to appreciate how things go. There are curves, obviously. Every time that we work on a new issue, it takes 3 to 5 years for the curve to go down, and that is the most desirable and healthiest scenario for everyone. But to do that, every day we have to monitor the channels, 8 to 9 or even 10 hours. This is a specific a program that was developed by Sanasa. Would you like me to share some of that data? No? Okay, perfect. Okay, that's it. I'll stop.
Enthusiastic answer, and so everyone is aware. Rosina is able to connect real time to show that data. We do have the plenary session starting in 15 minutes, and I would like to give everyone a chance to have a health break before that session starts. But I'm sure that if you come and talk to Rosina, she would be happy to arrange a time to show and demonstrate the work that she's been doing. I'd like to thank all of the speakers for participating in, or for agreeing to speak, and for putting so much work into your presentations today. I think it was a really dynamic session. And I'd like to thank all of you for coming here to listen to this session. Hopefully it's given you something to think about, to reflect on. Please do share the link for the recorded session with your colleagues, and hopefully this starts a conversation in your organizations, and also even more within the IPPC Secretariat. So let this be the beginning of a conversation all week, and thank you so much to all of you for coming. Thank you also to NAPO, COSAVE, and EPO, and the IC for helping to organize this session, and to all the speakers. Thanks.